The Tom Woods Show, episode 2214.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I'm giving away three free courses from my Liberty Classroom. One of them is ex-Marxist Michael Rechtenwald teaching you about critical theory so you can understand leftism and fight it better, as well as our course on how Alexander Hamilton screwed up America and the history of the conservative and libertarian movements. Check it out at 3freecourses.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm very glad to be joined today by Roger McCaffrey, even though, to be perfectly blunt, I'm not super glad to be discussing this particular topic, I have to say. I've had a lot of people asking me to say something about Pope Francis, and I've done that. I've done a bunch of episodes on that topic. But then I just felt like I've said everything I have to say. It's extremely demoralizing to have to talk about this guy. But if I'm going to do so, which, by the way, when you produce an infinite number of episodes, you eventually are going to approach the time where you have to talk about Pope Francis again because you've exhausted every possible topic. There's nobody I'd rather discuss it with than Roger McCaffrey, who is president of Roman Catholic Books. He publishes a magazine called The Traditionalist. He was the founder of the Latin Mass magazine, where I was managing and later associate editor for a number of years. And he has many other credentials to his credit as well, not least of which are his several previous appearances on The Tom Woods Show. Welcome back, Roger.
Thanks. And we can take care of Francis in about 10 seconds.
Indeed.
With silence. I mean, it's actually beginning to pour. Must we talk about him? I'd rather talk about, you know, anything else.
Well, so would I. But unfortunately, you're cursed with the fact that you have a lot of knowledge on this particular subject.
Well, I'm trying to forget, and I'm actually quite successful at forgetting all his scandals. So that doesn't leave much else because there's no theology with that. It's all politics, pure church politics and global politics of a left-wing variety. So let's talk about who's going to follow.
Yeah.
Listen, one quick thing. Roman Catholic Books has merged, in effect, with Sophia Press. We can still do a couple of titles a year.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
But I want to plug before people leave, which usually people leave after about 2 minutes of me, or even less. I just want to plug CatholicMediaApostolate.com because Priscilla has a...
Your wife, just so everyone knows.
My wife, my beloved wife, has an excellent podcast, which is periodic and focuses on mom issues, but also some Catholic/Christian literary things. And it's really good. And I'd love for people to check it out, CatholicMediaApostolate.com. Now, if they want, they can just go move on to another podcast.
Well, once they've exhausted all the Tom Woods Show episodes, then they have permission move on to some undisclosed other podcast.
I'm listening to your stuff occasionally, and the only reason I don't listen more often to the Tom Woods entrepreneur material is because I'm very comfortable as a failure. I'm quite successful as a failure, and so I don't want to learn how to earn an extra $38,000 a year because then I won't be able to sleep.
I figure out a way. I make it work.
Yeah, I know. Well, you believe in passive income streams, and I've invented a new form of income stream. It's called the ultra-passive income stream, where you don't even start a business to generate a passive stream. You just wait for either a will bequest or...
It's not, you know, that system doesn't work for everybody, we'll say.
No, you ought to think about that, just if you get in downtime, which you probably don't have.
Well, listen, by the way, all right, folks, look, feel free, leave Woods in your will if you like, you know. If you want to mention Woods in your will, go ahead and do that. All right, so let's say something about a possible successor to Pope Francis. This may seem a little bit premature, but there is some word coming out of some voices in the Vatican that his health is not good.
No, it's not premature. And no one really knows, blah, 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 because popes hide their illnesses. But it's pretty obvious to me that he's got a fatal illness, probably cancer. And I go over there a couple of times a year to Rome, and I talk to people. And so I don't think I'm on, you know, obviously I couldn't rush this into print and I wouldn't bother. But it sounds to me like he's got cancer and he's suffering, and he's even more impatient than he normally is, which is saying something. So he's actually doubling down on his church and political leftism. There's nothing I can say about this guy's pontificate, pardon my irreverence, that is inspiring. So people who have the same sort of vague impression, well, you're not alone. But as a result, there's a lot of talk about different kinds of popes. And my guess is that there'll be a conclave in the next 12 to 15 months. And his candidates will be prominent.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, here's the problem with the way the popes are elected. You know, in the old days, before the College of Cardinals more or less established that they would be the body that would choose the pope, there were emperors choosing popes. You know, there were secular rulers that were choosing popes. And not that I'm particularly fond of any of the secular rulers we have in this day and age, but how could they choose a worse pope than a bunch of cardinals, a great many of whom were chosen by and elevated by Francis himself? That's the thing, is that the person who's sitting in the office gets to choose the people, at least a chunk of them, who are going to choose his successor.
Yeah, well, his vote will be the Francis contingent, which is, you know, approximately 2/3 of the voting cardinals. If it's held tomorrow, a conclave will be decisive. They might not elect a Francis appointee, but the next pope will be, unless lightning strikes, the next pope will be certainly a political liberal. All the candidates on my list are political liberals, but it's probably going to be a so-called church liberal, a theological liberal. By the way, there was a papal election in the last 150 years where the Austro-Hungarian emperor vetoed the pick, right? Rumpala?
Oh, maybe you're right. But who did we get instead?
Pius X, I think. Well, in other words, 110 or 120 years ago. So just to prove your point, you know, all kinds of factors go into the election of a man in the church or the selection of a man. So church politics is crucial to understanding what happened with Francis, who basically faked out the College of Cardinals, which was no great shakes when he was elected in 2013. But also why John Paul was elected, you know, a Polish pope, and then Ratzinger, a church politician. You don't need to believe in their holiness, but you do need to understand politics. I'm not denying the role of the Holy Spirit, but it's usually, I think it's fair to say, as often as not, the grace that's offered to these cardinals is not cooperated with. So anyhow, Francis was elected, A, because a lot of men who voted for him didn't know who he was, didn't know what he represented. And secondly, because the Italian vote divided. And the Italians, even today, comprise 15% of the voting College of Cardinals, 15, 16%. And if they unite, they're probably going to elect the next pope. But if they divide, then another liberal will be chosen, in my opinion. Anyhow.
Well, let me just say something about, there are some political liberals, well, you know, sort of political liberals, who, when it comes to church matters, can be somewhat moderate, you know, like they believe in the seven sacraments or something like that.
Right.
But in this day and age, if you look around the world and you say, the thing I want to be right now is a political liberal, that's what the world needs more of, then you're a moron.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't be trusted on anything.
Correct. I couldn't agree more. But it's also embarrassing. And there is a point to it when Francis embraces, you know, climate change crap, or when he welcomes a stream of these ultra-leftist, super-rich, you know, tech guys like Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates, what's his name, Steve Cook. I mean, these people personify 21st century porridge leftism. Francis is a fool, but above all, he's a political man who wants to advance the agenda of the hard left and unite it with Christianity, which of course can't be done. So it makes him, in my mind, the worst pope in history.
And extremely, by far.
Yeah, by far, by far.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear about Renaissance era popes and whatever, and their indiscretion. I don't even want to hear about that. That can't even remotely compare. And the thing is, if I'm dealing with somebody who doesn't see this, I don't even have the energy to try to convince. I don't care, you know. Or then go ahead and like him if you want to.
I agree.
Obviously, you're not reading anything he's saying. Obviously, you're not watching anything he's doing. Obviously, you're not aware of all the horrific people he glad hands and approves of and promotes. Then I'm not going to do your homework for you. I'm tired of doing that. You know, now that I've reached half a century, I'm not doing people's work for them anymore.
Touche.
So, all right. So now that we've explained, we don't need, and plus, go back and listen to the old Francis episodes. Go to tomspodcast.com. The whole list of episodes is there. Look for Pope or Church or whatever as keywords, and you'll find those episodes. So let's indeed talk about, and we say conclave. I want to make sure we're not using words people don't know. Conclave is the meeting of the cardinals where they choose the next pope. And presumably it comes from Latin with the keys, you know, conclave, because the idea is that the keys are given to Peter. And the idea is that the popes are the successors of Peter and they hold the keys. And so the cardinals are in effect waiting to find out which person the keys are going to be bestowed upon. So let's talk about that. I noticed in an article you wrote recently that you have from Sri Lanka, you still have Cardinal Ranjith as a dark horse. And yeah. Cardinal Ranjith has been a McCaffrey dark horse since I think I've known you, since the 1990s.
Yeah, his star is rising, although I think he's, you know, one of the six or seven most likelies, but he's probably seven, you know. And the reason he's important, first of all, he's challenging his government publicly. And in other words, he's showing toughness and developing a reputation inside the church for something other than Catholic orthodoxy, which used to be his, you know, part of his DNA. And anyone who heard his name would think orthodoxy. Well, now they are seeing him challenge his government, putting his life theoretically, probably really on the line. So his stature is growing. He's getting older, and that makes him a safer pick for 120 cardinals who like the idea of a safe pick.
I have a funny feeling, maybe I'm misremembering this, that Pope Leo XIII seemed to be that way. And then he lived like forever after.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and of course, back then, if you elected a 68-year-old,
you're already pushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things are different now. But anyway, Ranjith's only 75 soon, I believe. But the guy I'm looking at one more as a strong, he's in the top three, undoubtedly, in my opinion. Not because I like him, because I don't have a high opinion of him, is O'Malley. I think you could easily see an American elect next time.
O'Malley is the Cardinal Archbishop of Boston.
Correct. And he's a Capuchin friar.
Yeah.
And his persona is one of, you know, easygoing holiness. And at the same time, in terms of church politics, he's 78. So again, if you're going to do something radical like elect an American.
Yeah, pick one who isn't going to be around long enough to do anything.
Exactly. You're not going to elect a 65-year-old. But the point is, O'Malley's well-known in college and he's respected. He actually, a few months ago, was called on by the Italian Bishops Conference. This would have been unthinkable 20 years ago to give a Zoom presentation/lecture on one of his areas of expertise, which unfortunately is handling abuse of largely of children by clergy. And my point is, you don't lecture the Italian bishops as an American on anything. At least you didn't used to. And the fact that they welcomed him, not only was he speaking to all the Italian voting cardinals in this Zoom meeting, but they embraced O'Malley. So I think he's a very strong top two. And it'll be very appealing to the people who don't know O'Malley, and that's probably half the voting cardinals, to elect an American. You can't go wrong with an American. It's like investing in the American stock market, you know? You can't go wrong. And that's the way outsiders, that's the way foreigners see us largely, especially professional churchmen, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, okay, so O'Malley's one. I know the type he is.
Yeah.
There are a lot like him. But what do you think his relationship with Francis is like?
I don't think anyone's a friend of Francis. Everything I hear is that Francis is hard to approach. That doesn't mean you wouldn't have a cordial, you know, lunch with him, but he's not a nice man. And he's in pain. And, you know, at this point, I think he's in pain, and that doesn't help any. But I think O'Malley's relationship with Francis is
as good as it gets.
As good as it gets. And, you know, O'Malley was made one of the nine high council of cardinals right away after Francis was elected. So it's quite clear that O'Malley got votes in the Francis conclave of 2013. Ward, as he got 11 or 12 votes. And that's a serious base of support and increases his prominence. And that's why he was put on the Council of Cardinals.
What's your instinct on whether he wants the position or not?
You know, I'm not one who thinks they all campaign. They're not like U.S. senators. But let me put it this way, Tom. I don't think he'd turn it down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think he probably has a sense of duty, but you know, I don't know where he is on the theology spectrum. That's a separate issue. But he's a centrist, let's say, theologically. Certainly a cautious left-winger politically. And the other guy, Tagle, a Filipino, would be the other one who's now leaping ahead. He now has one of the important positions in Rome because he gives money away. And therefore, he is considered important for the next conclave. A contender. He's only 66, and sorry, but the foolishness that you hear from him is, even for the 21st century, it's a little embarrassing. It's like listening to Nikki Haley on foreign policy.
That, you know, that's a pretty good analogy.
I mean, it just makes you just, if there wasn't so much at stake, you'd just have a good laugh. But, you know, these are, say, despite my seeming irreverence, I embrace the Catholic faith, and that's why I'm so appalled by some of these papal candidates and by Francis, because I don't think Francis embraces the faith in the same way that we traditional Catholics, small t, do.
Yeah.
And I don't know about O'Malley, and I, from what Tagle, Cardinal Tagle, is saying, good God, you know. I mean, this might have gone down well in Manila, but, you know, when he's pope, it's going to be a little scary.
Hey, everybody, let's thank our sponsor, Crowd Health. You know, you can get in a lot of trouble by just coasting through life on autopilot, doing what everybody else is doing. For example, there are a lot of people who are in a lot of college debt right now with not a lot to show for it because they just went with the flow and did what everybody else was doing. But in healthcare, what everybody else is doing is really, really not working. Crowd Health puts your healthcare back in your hands. Cut out the middleman, save money, fund your healthcare costs without relying on big government or big health insurance companies. See any doctor you want, no exclusive doctor networks, no huge premiums or high deductibles. Pay only the first $500 of any healthcare event, the Crowd Health community takes care of the rest. So here's how it works. You pay one low monthly total to fund your account. You can hold up to 75% of that in Bitcoin if you want. Your monthly subscription helps fund healthcare costs of the entire Crowd Health community. So Crowd Health totally reverses the vicious incentives that got us into this healthcare mess in the first place. Crowd Health helps you find great care at a fair price, always pays doctors as quickly as possible, and actively negotiates to keep costs down for everyone. Well, take charge of your healthcare today with Crowd Health. Open enrollment is the only time you can hit eject on the broken system without penalty, so don't wait. And for a limited time, join for just $99 per month for your first 6 months when you use promo code WOODS at joincrowdhealth.com. That's joincrowdhealth.com, promo code WOODS. Crowd Health is not health insurance. It's a totally different way of paying for healthcare. Terms and conditions may apply. What motivates church liberal? I mean, you look over the vast history of Catholicism, there is really nothing in it that you could describe as leftism. There really is. I mean, the closest you get is, you know, some of the social encyclicals, but even that's not leftism. That's maybe a traditionalist critique of the free market, but that's not leftism just because they, you know, maybe they want the workers to be able to organize or something. It's not the same thing. There's nothing. They have no roots in it at all. So is it, I refuse to believe it's stupidity because, sorry, they know too much to just be stupid.
Right.
Is it a desire to destroy? I mean, I'm trying to, I used to be the sort of person who'd say, I want to give these people the benefit of the doubt. I don't anymore. I really don't. Because at this point, I look at the world and there are some people who want to destroy everything and there are other people who are desperately trying to hold it together. And almost everybody in the Catholic hierarchy is on the destruction side. You know, and there's no excuse for that. How do you not see this? How is that an innocent mistake?
I couldn't have put it better myself, Tom. But I would point out that these men now, I'm in my mid-60s and I saw the training that was offered young seminarians, because I was at the University of Dallas, which is officially a Catholic school. I changed my major about 7 times, but I was for a while, and I majored in theology. So I took courses with these seminarians, 2 or 3 of whom are now bishops. And although the coursework was pretty demanding, they weren't putting much thought into the coursework, not any more than I was, which I did okay, but they're not seriously trained is what I'm trying to say. Now, some of them go on and get doctorates in Rome, and depending on their doctorate, like Tagle, Cardinal Tagle, and the coursework that they did and the professors they had, they might be the morons you think they are. And that assumes they're serious students. But so in other words, especially on matters economic, forget it. Just forget it.
On that, I'm not even worried because I feel like even the economists are no good on economics. How can I expect people in another field entirely to be any good at it? That's been kind of my thought on that.
But thou shalt not steal.
It's pretty clear, right? Yeah.
It's just commandment. So you have no business being, in any sense, a socialist, And yet most of these guys are small-ass socialists, most of these cardinals. Okay? They are not trained in the topic. But still, your expectation is that they wouldn't at least believe in mass theft. Or in the case of Francis, and all of these men, speaking of masks, no pun intended, embracing the agenda of the control freaks and communists. What else can one say? Communists who forced everyone into their homes and in masks. And the Vatican still has either a mask mandate or a vax mandate or both, So they have no excuse for that. And guys like Tagle and O'Malley, really all of them on my short list, and I think one of them will be Pope, are hopeless on that too. Well, I don't know what motivates them, but I know that they're often poorly trained. A few of them I've met and spent time with, 3 of them, and the 3 of who will be voting. And I can tell you that, in one case, I happen to like the man. I won't use his name. I can't, but we were talking about the gold standard. I don't know. We got onto, it was around 2008. So I was saying, of course, how worried I was. And I don't know whether it was pre-crash or post-crash, probably post. And I said this could spin out of control, et cetera, et cetera. And then the U.S. dollar could collapse. Well, I was slightly wrong there, but it did for a while. It was hurting. And he said, well, I thought the dollar was backed by gold. So that's about the level.
Yeah.
This man could be elected.
Yeah. I know. I mean, there were people on the House Banking Committee who, within our lifetimes, thought that, according to Ron Paul.
Yeah. Well, in an odd way, in a stupid way, they're right. Yes, there is gold in Fort Knox. That's about how far that goes.
Yeah.
But in any event, I think Francis is intent. He's a left-wing Jesuit. All cardinals are called conservative, by the way, by the New York Times. There isn't a single one I've not seen called a conservative. So forget their definition. But Francis has a left-wing agenda. I don't see it as a Christian agenda at all, frankly. And he's not a fool about that. His personnel picks are almost uniformly shocking to uninspiring. That's the spectrum. And so something needs to change, and there's going to be a big fight at this conclave, but 2/3 vote is required. And I think there's only 1/3 of the vote is really serious and really grasps the enormity of the Francis pontificate and the Benedict resignation, which brought this on. 2/3 of these men are, I don't know what their motives are, but they're not the same as mine, I can assure you. And they're not the same as the other 1/3 of the voters. So it's going to be a big fight. This could go on for 2 weeks. It could be really, well, to me, it's fascinating, but I've probably lost 99% of your listeners. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
It's fascinating because it's politics at its most pure in a way. And what I mean is that they're voting in secret, and they do not have to justify what they've done before or after the conclave. And no one's supposed to know what the vote outcome is, except that there was a winner, so to speak. Yeah, I deeply believe in the truth of the Catholic faith, but this has nothing to do with my evaluation of a given pope,
Yeah.
So I feel free to talk about the politics of this.
Oh, of course.
But most people get squirmy when, and I remember even my beloved father said, after my third article on the next pope in the 1990s, you know, oh, gently, of course, he said, yeah, enough is enough, though, you know. So, but he was a brilliant...
Oh, of course. I've read a lot of stuff from your father.
Right. Armchair Catholic observer, very well trained. And so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely great. And I see some of where you get your writing style from, actually, a little bit in your father. But let's go back to it. What I was about to say is I realize he's quite old and that he has been very hands-off during the Francis pontificate. But is there any possibility that Benedict plays any role whatsoever in the outcome? Obviously, he's not in the conclave. He's too old, and I don't even know if he qualifies. I mean, we've never been in this situation before, so he wouldn't be physically present. But is there any way he plays a role in it?
Yeah, yes. And this is an important point. Yes, because there are meetings and discussions going on and have been for years, and this is why the Catholics on the so-called right who alleged that there was a conspiracy to elect someone other than Ratzinger and are wrong. In other words, yeah, yes, there was a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy right now to elect three different cardinals. And on our side, there's discussion, shall we call it that? Or you can call it a conspiracy if you wish. Cardinals meet and talk about candidates. And anyway, so yeah, Ratzinger is being talked to. People visit him, churchmen that he made prominent are visiting him and talking things over. Sure. Sure, he's going to have an impact. If you want to put a number on it, I think he might swing 5 or 10 votes if he's giving opinions.
And what's the total number that will be cast?
Right now, about 123. But no, by the end of the year, it's going to be something like 120. Once they're 80, they can't vote. But an 82-year-old who's a prominent man, like Cardinal Pell, for example, he lives in Rome, as many do, and he's talking to other cardinals. So he gives his opinions. He swings votes. A cardinal from Iraq or something isn't going to swing the votes that a more experienced and more better located cardinal is going to do. So they all influence votes. Yes, definitely. And Ratzinger is still, you know, he's still sound mentally. So.
Right, right.
His protege, by the way, is Cardinal Schönborn, 77, Austrian. Has become increasingly liberal over the years. And he said the other day, and he's a kingmaker, one of three or four in the next conclave. He said the other day, it probably won't be a European. This is, again, talk you would never have heard even 20 years ago, but certainly 30, 40 years ago, this kind of loose talk publicly. I mean, what that means to me is that Cardinal Schönborn, A, will be a player in the next conclave. B, is encouraging other cardinals publicly, because he can't talk to them privately as easily, to think about electing a non-Italian. Because there's only two candidates. There's an Italian possibility or two. There's a Hungarian. But other than that, you're not getting an Italian. And Schönborn is now actively promoting that view. So he's influencing votes right now, and he'll carry 10 votes.
It's interesting how quickly and seemingly, I don't know, I can't say permanently, but how quickly and decisively the Italians lost the papacy, starting with John Paul II.
Well, yeah, that's because they divided. You know, back then they were 25% of the voting cardinals. So theoretically, if they were united, they could be, well, they did dominate in many ways, but the Italian vote divided. There were two candidates. I think that's going to happen again, by the way. There's two Italians who were clear candidates. Once that happens, they divide, and after a couple of ballots, people begin to move on and perceive the will of God in a Cardinal O'Malley or someone like that. But the Italians are now, you know, they're a mere 15% of the voting block. So, but they'll always be, you know, they dominate the bureaucracy still, and that's implicit. It's understood that if you elect a non-Italian, that the Pope almost has to have an Italian Secretary of State, or at any rate, permit them to dominate his cabinet or curia. So, for what that's worth.
All right, let's go back to so we've talked about O'Malley. Who else?
Cardinal O'Malley of Boston, Cardinal Tagle of the Philippines.
Right.
Cardinal Ouellette of Canada is perfectly positioned. He's also 78, he's born the same month practically as O'Malley. In fact, I think they're almost exactly the same age. So, they're safe votes. in the sense that they're not going to be around probably for more than 5 or 10 years. But Ouellette is serious. He got 22 votes, according to the best rumor, in 2013. And the two Italians that are Zuppi, who's a 66-year-old leftist, and Parolin, who's a 66-year-old career diplomat, secretary of state. But I think they're going to divide the vote. But, you know, these are guys, especially Parolin and O'Malley, and especially Togli. Parolin and Togli and Ouellette know everybody, because every cardinal hangs out in Rome for a while. So they're easier to elect, because you're casting a vote for a man who has impressed you, you know, over lunch or whatever. Now, the other factor, Tom, is that recently Cardinal Brandmuller, a German nonagenarian, issued a declaration. It's really a challenge to not only to Pope Francis, but to the church at the top, about the process for electing the Pope. And he was going to deliver this statement at a meeting of cardinals called a consistory, but Francis arranged it so that the cardinals could not talk to each other in the consistory, which itself is outrageous. You know, they're there to advise the Pope. He calls the consistory, and then he tells them they can't address each other in the full body. This is all totally unprecedented, totally unprecedented. So there's real outrage, and Brandmuller expressed it. We publish it in the upcoming issue of the magazine. It's available on the web, of course. Brandmuller expressed that outrage in a declaration about electing the Pope. And he basically accused the current papal regime of manipulating the vote. So people interested in this topic need to read the Cardinal Brandmuller, Brandmuller. Statement last month.
Okay. I'll look for it.
Yeah.
And I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/2214.
Good, good. It's an important historical document. And for two reasons. One, in what it advocates for reforming the process. But two, because he's really throwing down the gauntlet with the current regime. So that's fascinating. That too, that statement will influence the vote. Everything influences a few votes. And before you know it, you've got a candidate. And as Buchanan said, you know, when we were talking once about the New Hampshire primary, McCain and all these non-entities were polling at about 6% each. You know, and so we went through the list casually, and he looked at me and said, well, you know, somebody's going to be nominated. One of these, you know, and one of these guys is going to be nominated. It's not going to be somebody who announces it, you know, June. Like Pete Wilson or whoever that is. No, it's going to be one of these mediocrities. Well, exactly the same is true. I'm looking at this list, and one of these guys is going to emerge. One of these guys will be the culmination of a little conspiracy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable what goes on. So let's try to summarize here. What's the best and worst that a normal person can expect? I mean, reasonably speaking, absent some shocking miracle.
Well, the worst would be Togli or Zuppi of the candidates. If either one of them emerges, you know, there's more trouble coming. But they're both softer than Francis, who's a Jesuit. And, you know, the Jesuits, when they're great, but when they're not great, they're really not great.
Yeah.
But they're very self-confident. You know, they're very, very self-confident. And they can really be irascible. And so that's Francis. He's a Jesuit. So you won't have a Jesuit, and you won't have a man with an obvious agenda. So, but Togli and Zuppi are both basically leftists, and neither one is dumb. Make no mistake. And they're not masterful, perhaps, but they're not dumb. And although they sound dumb sometimes. But O'Malley would be, O'Malley and Ouellette, especially O'Malley, who's got a better chance, would be like Boston. You know, and you know Boston. There's nothing there. There seems to be no life in the church in Boston. If there is, you've got to, you know, you need a hunting party to find it. Am I overstating it? And that's O'Malley. He's been there for how many years? 20 years. So he's the most likely scenario. Wouldn't be the worst, but you could see Ranjith come out of there, and he would be very interesting. He's got the best resume, the broadest resume of the whole group, but and also, there's a Hungarian named Cardinal Erdo, E-R-T-O, who is being talked about. He's a canon lawyer. Of the realistic candidates, he'd probably be the most. He's a centrist all the way. And by the book, total bore. And yet, you know, he's going to figure. He'll get some votes. So I think, again, this will come in 12 to 15 months, maybe.
Well, we're going to post this and we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if that comes true or not. Now, okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask for a link, but it isn't. I'm not sure you can link, but since it's, I wrote a couple pieces, not on the papacy, but on a totally different subject. And since it's the anniversary coming up of my son John's death, and I wrote about it in the Wall Street Journal, and I'd like people to see that. There are two pieces, if they're able to go and find it. One is February of 02, and the other is, I don't know, July of 09. And if they want to see samples of my writing, I'd also like them to see those.
All right, I'll figure out one way or another to...
Yeah, you know, I mean, I just want to mention, so the 1% of the listeners still around.
Well, I'll have it up at tomwoods.com/2214. I'll also link to catholicmediaapostolate.com where people can find Priscilla's podcast.
They're really fun. Women of all ages will really enjoy them.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thanks, Roger. And then, of course, when this happens, we'll have you back on and evaluate what happened.
Yeah. You know, sorry for not electrifying people more, but if you're interested in the church, you've got to know what, especially the conclave, you got to know this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I like staying up on these things just because I like intrigue and, you know, different competing factions and stuff like this is right up my alley. I wish it weren't so, but unfortunately, these are the cards we've been dealt. So, Roger, thank you for talking to us about it.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Tom Woods Show. I will see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.